You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Brian O'Halloran, you might know me from such iconic nerd films as Clerks and Clerks 2 and Vulgar and Brutal Massacre. Anyway, you're listening to the Flopcast with Kevin and Cornflake right here.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 352.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Kevin, hi.
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 It's our big Aresia show. We're very excited.
Yes.
We're going to figure out what happened, where it all went wrong, why you didn't show up. We're going to break it all down. I had a lovely time. Before we get to Aresia, Cornflake, what do you have this week for National Whatever Day?
I'm on a bit of a celebrity birthday kick these days, Kevin.
That's fine.
So, on February 8th, we'll wish a happy 45th birthday to Seth Green.
Okay.
So, he's Chris from Family Guy. He is one of the co-creators of the TV show Robot Chicken.
Yes.
He's also, I didn't know this, an uncredited vampire in the 1992 motion picture Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know much about Seth Green. I know who he is. Yeah, Robot Chicken I never even got into, which is so weird because it's animation and it's all goofy pop culture stuff. It's robots and it's chickens.
Right.
And they use the old Mego dolls, like they'll do animation like with the old
Mego. Stop motion, yeah.
Yeah, the stop motion that they'll use the superhero Mego dolls from the 70s, which I love. It's like they made a show just for me and I don't watch it. Thank you.
Kind of blows my mind that you don't watch Robot Chicken.
Yeah,
but
sorry, Seth. Happy birthday.
You may have seen him in more things than you think. It's kind of like when you name one of those bands from the 70s or 80s that you think nobody knows, and then suddenly you listen to the music and you realize you recognize every single one of the tunes.
Yeah, yeah. Turns out I'm the biggest Bread fan in the world.
Exactly. So I think that's...
Remember Bread?
I don't, but then I do.
Yes.
Because then you play the songs and I know them, right, and I just thought they were somebody else.
You know so many songs by a weird like 70s soft rock band called Bread. You have no idea.
And you just don't realize it. Well, I would say that Seth Green is the Bread of the television and movie world because, yes. I mean, you've seen Austin Powers, right?
Yes.
He's Scott Evil.
Right. That's right. I forgot. I haven't seen Austin Powers in so long, but yes, he is Scott Evil.
Yeah, he's Scott! And he's also the voice of Howard the Duck from the 2014 cameo appearance of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
And,
yep.
Get this,
yeah.
He made appearances on Mr. Belvedere.
Well, there's your most important credit.
Ooh.
Would be Mr. Belvedere.
Anything having to do with Mr. Belvedere gets my attention.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, he's in so many things as a voice or, you know, acting.
Did he replace Christopher Hewitt and become the new Mr. Belvedere?
What was
his part on Mr. Belvedere? Was he Mr. Belvedere?
No, he's just one of the kids that shows up on the show for a couple of the episodes.
I watched some Mr. Belvedere.
Oh, I watched the heck out of Mr. Belvedere. Mr. Belvedere,
yep.
As I recall, would be on at some ungodly hour of the morning. If I woke up at 3 or 4 in the morning, it would be on.
Yeah, that's how I found it, was like in syndicated daily reruns at some point.
Yeah.
For some reason, I started catching a lot of Mr. Belvedere. I probably haven't seen as much of it as you. It's like a middle-class suburban family with a butler.
Exactly. And Mr. Belvedere, that butler, he will put you in your place.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Belvedere, when I was a kid, might have been my first true exposure to honest-to-goodness snark.
Mm.
And that's what I loved, a good snarky Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, and now pre-Mr. Belvedere, that guy, Christopher Hewitt, he replaced Hervé Villechaize on Fantasy Island. He was Mr. Rourke's assistant. He was the new tattoo on Fantasy Island.
He was?
Yeah, late in the run of Fantasy Island, they fired Hervé Villechaize. They brought in Christopher Hewitt.
Was it controversial?
Very controversial. There was rioting You were very young at the time. You don't remember how dark and violent things got in the early 80s, all based on the firing of Tattoo. Now, and you know, like the iconic scene in the Fantasy Island opening credits where Tattoo goes up those little winding stairs to ring the bell at the top of the tower?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Belvedere would not climb up to the top of the tower. He just pushed a button, like at ground level, to ring the bell.
That lazy.
He was practically phoning it in.
He's a lazy daisy, Mr. Belvedere.
You know?
Well, now I understand why people were mad.
That's why I consider Mr. Belvedere a direct spinoff of Fantasy Island. In that his fantasy was to be a butler to a suburban middle-class family.
You can make that case.
Yeah.
What I'm curious about is after the whole Fantasy Island shakeup,
right.
Do you believe that cast a pall on Mr. Belvedere?
Absolutely.
You think, like, people were not watching in protest?
Yeah, Fantasy Island fans started an organized protest of Mr. Belvedere. Oh, yeah. Just ask your buddy Seth Green. He knows how this all went down.
Wow. So the only reason I enjoyed Mr. Belvedere is because I didn't know what happened on Fantasy Island.
How confused do you think people are right now that tuned in to listen to us talk about Aresia? Sorry, just, convention fans.
Forgive me. We're just taking a couple of minutes here while my mind is absolutely blown about Fantasy Island and Mr. Belvedere. I didn't consider the implications of wishing it, like, one Seth Green a happy birthday, and here we are.
If I recall, a very, very young Seth Green was in Radio Days,
yes.
Woody Allen movie.
You
playing,
are correct.
Playing the young kid, essentially the Woody Allen kid in Radio Days. I am correct?
Yes.
You can confirm that?
Yes, okay. I can. Seth Green is bread.
Yes, he is. All right, you know what? Let's move on.
I think
Aresia.
We better.
Because Aresia, we had to push this back because of scheduling, but Aresia was 2 weeks ago. Aresia is a science fiction fantasy convention in Boston every winter, every January. It's been running for 30 years now. This was the 30th, I think. Started in 1990. We've been to many Aresias over the last few years.
The first one I went to was back in 2013.
Mm-hmm. Estimated attendance this year, according to my facts and figures page that I have in front of me, was 3,200 people.
Healthy convention.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, we have to say up front, this was a challenging year for Aresia for a couple of reasons. We're not going to go into the ugly details of it, but there were issues that had to be resolved this year. And a lot of people, I think, actually stayed away this year because of some of those issues, which was a valid decision for those people. That's fine. Some major steps had to be taken, I think, to resolve some of the issues that came up over the last several months. You're going right up to the top, you know, leadership changes in the whole organization. And they made those changes. So I was satisfied that they made enough of an effort to right the ship that I thought, all right, we can participate again this year. And again, you can look up Aresia online and you can see what they were dealing with. And the other thing was the hotel. They had to, very last minute, relocate to a whole different hotel this year.
For completely different reasons.
Yeah, totally unrelated, but there was a threat of a hotel workers' strike. And it was coming so close to when they had to make a move that they made the move. Now, the strike was settled, but too late.
Right.
They switched to a different hotel.
This is not a thing that you can flip-flop at the last minute.
Yeah. So they're at the Boston Park Plaza Hotel this year. But apparently they'd been at this hotel before long ago. But for as long as we've been going, they were at the West End.
On the waterfront.
Out on the waterfront. Now they were right in the middle of the city, which I liked.
I thought you might.
I liked being in the heart of the city instead of out on the water. Because you can walk to stuff.
Right.
Theoretically. I mean, once the super cold and snow got going, even that was hard. But
that was another factor.
Out on the waterfront, where the West End, that's where all the convention centers and stuff are. There's like a whole convention neighborhood of Boston. But you can't really walk anywhere from there.
Right.
Especially in the winter.
You can go to a pint-sized Dunkin' Donuts, which is pretty much just a counter where you get some coffee, and that is it.
I don't even know about the Dunkin' Donuts. You'll have to show me where that is sometime.
Next time, I'll show you where they hide the dunks.
First time hearing of it. But yeah, you walk out there, and it's just this horrifying, windswept concrete nothing, you know, as
yes.
far as the eye can see.
And windswept it is. It is you're in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, yeah. So it was nice to actually walk out the door and have options to walk to restaurants and whatnot.
I'm kind of evil. You know, if you stand inside and watch people going by, it's just like, you just watch people just blow past the window literally because the wind is so ridiculous.
Didn't all your clothes blow off on the way to
Aresia
last year?
Yeah, last year they did.
I seem to recall.
I stepped off the Silver Line and there was this swoop of wind and my shirt just went right up.
Yeah, I did not witness this, but I seem to recall you had a wind-related wardrobe malfunction last year on your way to Aresia. Yeah, we're not kidding about the wind around that place.
Hello, Boston!
So this year they're right in the heart of the city, a little easier to get to, for me at least. I like the new location. The hotel itself was a weird fit for the convention as we've come to know it, in that it's an old hotel. It's a big hotel, but very old, and not really shaped to fit a convention. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really like a big common sort of gathering area for people, and it seemed very fragmented.
Like having a convention in an inn? Because that's what I imagine the Boston Park Plaza would be like.
Yeah, everyone's kind of hiding in their own little rooms everywhere, you know? There's a ton of programming going on. There's so much going on at Aresia. They do so much stuff there. Panels and movies and gaming and the dealers and workshops and stuff. And there's all kinds of performances going on. All that stuff was still happening.
But no common area to mill about.
You had to kind of wander around and find everything because it was all kind of scattered about this old hotel. So it worked, but it was a very different vibe, I thought. And I was kind of confused the whole weekend, just where do I go now? I never really got the hang of how to find anything, so I was always kind of walking in circles.
That's me every Aresia.
That's so true. That's business as usual for Cornflake.
Yes.
Now, you were not able to come.
Yes.
In part because of the weather, right? You were planning to be there on Sunday.
Right.
And Sunday was the horrifying weather day.
So, yes, we drew straws before we all went into Aresia, and I got Sunday. So I thought, well, I've always been interested to see what an Aresia is like on Sunday. Saturday is kind of bananas, and Sunday there's some similar programming, but it's not as much of a swarm, so I thought that might be more my speed. And of course, then we had that ridiculous snowstorm. We were still going to try to come on Sunday. Me and all of the Chickentown Outpost denizens actually were going to come down to Boston. And unfortunately, my leg was slightly out of the socket, so I couldn't walk. And so I thought, well, I could get through this horrifying snowstorm, but even when I get there, I'm not going to be able to get around.
Yeah, but they were telling people not to drive anywhere. You know,
it's funny, that wasn't going to stop me.
Yeah.
the factor of not being able to get around to the convention is kind of what finally did me in.
Well,
so
yeah.
Even before I started having the leg issues, I had sent you a text saying, Kevin, the snowstorm, it might be a problem.
Yeah, well, it's fine. I think you had reasonable excuse to not be able to be there. We missed you, of course.
And my press pass is still sitting there somewhere. And I felt bad to miss it. I was excited.
Somebody's running around Boston right now with your press pass.
Pretending to report on Aresia on behalf of the Flopcast.
They have the run of the city right now. They can get in wherever they want.
And they're calling themselves Cornflake.
Yes, they are.
The nerve.
I'm going to tell you everything I did at Aresia. It's going to be like you were there.
Cool.
I'm going to really try to paint a picture. Yeah, the mayor of Chickentown and I got there on Friday, went to a panel about Kevin Smith.
A panel about Kevin Smith.
They did a Kevin Smith panel, I think because this is the 25th anniversary of Clerks.
I figured there must be an anniversary involved.
Clerks came out in 94.
Oh, wow.
There was a panel called Over-the-Counter Culture, Kevin Smith and Clerks. Dan Tolan was on this panel. He's great. Andy Hicks was on this panel. And you might remember Andy
from the cartoon panel.
The Saturday morning cartoon panel at Aresia last year. And a couple of other people as well. We're all talking about Kevin Smith and Clerks. And, of course, we are big fans.
Yes.
Andy Hicks just made this crazy video, mostly using stuff from Boston TV commercials and stuff from years and years ago.
Oh, we love old commercials.
We're obsessed with that. So, like, the old commercials for the aquarium and Boston Museum of Science and all that.
Where it's fun to find out.
Yeah, all that stuff. He took a bunch of that stuff and made this bizarre music video out of it all. And including, we should say, our buddy Robillard.
Isn't it?
Is in Andy's new video.
Oh,
yes.
Nice. Robillard appears on our ribbons currently.
Yeah, I was handing out Robillard ribbons. Robillard from Mars, the old Boston PSA about how you should eat earth fruit. Don't just eat candy bars. Featuring a Martian with a Boston accent. And yeah, I was handing out Flopcast Robillard badge ribbons all weekend at Aresia. And this was the first convention that we've brought the Robillard ribbons to where there are actually people that remember Robillard.
So they looked at the ribbon and they knew?
I was handing these out in Minnesota.
And nobody knew.
Nobody knew except DJ Particle.
Yes, Emmy.
Because she's from Boston.
Right.
I was handing them out at Dragon Con down in Atlanta. Nobody knows Robillard down there except maybe Mike Gordon.
Right.
Who's also from Massachusetts. Well, Robillard ribbons, yeah, were a lot more recognized and appreciated throughout the weekend, so that was nice.
Oh, I'd love to have seen that.
Here in Massachusetts. And we still have a lot of Robillard ribbons, so we have a couple more conventions coming out where people will be getting Flopcast Robillard ribbons. Notice my coffee mug? I'm drinking out of a Robillard coffee mug right now.
Is that from Aresia?
No. No, Ken Reed made these coffee mugs.
Oh, wow.
We have TV guidance counselors, Ken Reed. If you go to Ken's Tea Public store, you can get Robillard t-shirts, which we have. You can get Robillard coffee mugs.
Wow.
You can build your whole life around Robillard.
You, in fact, have.
Sort of what we're doing here.
Yes.
Anyway, Kevin Smith panel. Nice way to start Aresia. And there's a new Kevin Smith movie. I believe they've just started production, and that is Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. They're making a new Jay and Bob movie.
Oh, wow.
It's been a long time.
I thought you were going to say Clerks 3.
They were going to do Clerks 3. That got scratched. They were going to do Mallrats sequel. That got scratched. Now, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Wow.
That's underway now.
So we can kind of count on that.
I'm pretty sure this is actually happening.
All right.
After that was my first panel of the weekend. That was 7 o'clock on Friday. I was moderating the Star Wars holiday special, Yes, It's That Bad.
Please tell me there was a conversation about the Wookiee talk at the beginning.
Oh, we covered everything. As we did here on the Flopcast.
Yes.
Just back in December, you and I watched the holiday special and we discussed it.
After I saw it for the first time.
You'd never seen it before. Right at the top of the panel, I wanted to read the room. I asked the audience who has seen the special, who has never seen it. And it was about half and half. We had a good crowd there too. A lot of people showed up. Then I also asked, who saw it in 1978? Is there anyone who watched this thing on TV 40 years ago when they aired it? Two hands went up.
Wow.
Yeah, so not many people in the room had seen it back then, but two did, including the mayor of Chickentown was one of those two hands.
Wow.
Yeah. But we had Dan Tolan was on the panel with me, Cassandra and David. Those were the other panelists. I requested a projector for this panel, and they granted my request. They had there was a tech guy was there setting up a projector, and people thought that we were going to show the movie. And I said,
"Buckle
no.
in, kids!
I said, no, we're not showing the Star
for
Wars
the
holiday
next
special."
2 hours.
Yeah, I said, for one thing, Aresia panels are long. The panels at Aresia are not an hour. The Aresia panels are an hour and 15 minutes.
Right.
Then there's a 15-minute break, and then the next panel starts. That's how the whole schedule works for their programming. And it doesn't sound like a big difference, but it's a big difference. And, like, that's a long panel.
That's 25% more, isn't it?
Yeah, because if I'm moderating a panel and you're watching the clock and it's like, okay, usually, like, if we're, like, 45 minutes in, time to start winding down, right, or at least, you know, thinking about how you're going to get towards the end. At Aresia, it's, oh, we have a half hour to go.
Right.
So it makes a big difference. Nevertheless, I said, we got an hour, 15 minutes. That's not even enough time to watch the Star Wars holiday special. This thing is 2 hours long, and it feels like 11,
right,
you know? But I wanted a projector because I did bring slides. I brought PowerPoint slides, but not a PowerPoint presentation. I just brought still images from the special. So I just wanted to bring up images of what we were talking about. Because PowerPoint's tricky. You want to be very careful about PowerPoint at conventions, because I've seen PowerPoint used well, and I've seen PowerPoint used very poorly.
If you're reading off the slides?
Well, yeah. You don't want slides full of text. But also you have to think, what am I doing? Is this a presentation or is this a panel? And
right,
if it's a panel, you want to be very careful about PowerPoint, because you don't want to bring a PowerPoint presentation and then have your PowerPoint presentation dominate what was supposed to be a discussion. And suddenly the other panelists are just sitting there while you present your PowerPoint. You don't want it to be like that. I watched the panel from the audience once several years ago. And a couple of friends of mine were there. It was these three women, I think, were up on the panel. And then this guy showed up late. They had a nice discussion going. Like 15 minutes in, this dude showed up with a PowerPoint presentation. He was not the moderator. Sets up his PowerPoint presentation and then starts doing a PowerPoint presentation. Just totally disrupting what they were doing.
I've never met him and I want to kick him.
It was so obnoxious.
Oh!
And these friends of mine that were in the audience coined the term man-paneling. And now, when I'm preparing for a panel, I always think, I don't want a man panel this. So you want to be
Kevin,
careful. So
I know you put thought into this for sure, but you are the last person that I would ever expect to manpanel. I think I would probably accidentally manpanel before you'd ever do so.
And I let everybody know in advance. I said, I've prepared some slides. We're going to have a projector, but we're just going to have images up to go along.
Yeah, with for the sake about. Of having a visual element in yeah. your discussion.
And man, there's a lot of visuals for the holiday special, you know, and, right. and we had them all. So we're looking at the Wookiees
this is a picture is worth a thousand words.
Oh,
sort of thing.
Man. You know, obviously the B. Arthur cantina scene and
yeah.
The Diane Carroll virtual reality, you know, Grandpa Itchy watching his his sex video.
She is the best costumed of them all. It's just a little frightening what's going on there.
I found myself just making jokes about Itchy watching that video throughout the entire panel. I just couldn't resist. I was like, this will gonna laugh. And I just would do another another reference to Itchy watching his Diane Carroll video. But what fun we had. I just cannot escape the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Nope.
I'm going to spend the rest of my life discussing and analyzing the Holiday Special. I was on another panel Friday night. The girls are back in town. Glow. The
yes.
gorgeous ladies of wrestling. The TV series, the new Netflix show, Glow, which is so great. I don't think you've seen it yet.
No, I know of it.
Yeah, it's really good. You would even like it. Based on the actual, there was a real Glow, gorgeous ladies of wrestling, back in the 80s.
I have read up on it. Some of the characters on the Netflix show are based on
yes.
the original.
Yeah, they were inspired by the original Glow wrestlers. And it's a great, great show. The moderator of this panel was Dr. Pamela Gay.
Love it.
How about that?
She's amazing.
I was so happy that Pamela Gay was on this panel with me because I hadn't really had a chance to talk to her in quite a while. And she's great.
She's fantastic.
She's an astronomer, newly inducted into the Podcasting Hall of Fame.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Along with our friend Grant from Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd and whatnot.
All the greats.
They also inducted Pamela Gay this past year. I've seen her do so many like science and astronomy presentations and stuff at Aresia and at Dragon Con and at skeptic events and stuff many times over the years. I assisted her with this weird, crazy like science presentation that she did at Dragon Con many years ago, but I hadn't actually done anything with
did it
with
involve
her since.
Baking soda and a volcano?
Yeah, we made a baking soda volcano, yes. The audience was amazed. So it was Dr. Pamela Gay was running the show, and I think I was the only dude on the panel to discuss the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. So that was fun.
That sounds like an honor.
Yeah, Pamela actually put me on the spot a couple of times to exploit that fact, which was good. Because I've done a few panels like that. Like, they'll put me, I'm like the token dude on these panels. Because this Glow panel, I did a Wonder Woman panel like that a couple of years ago. I did a Supergirl panel like that.
I remember you telling me about the Wonder Woman panel you were going to
yeah.
be on and how you had to be careful not to mansplain Wonder
I'm going to mansplain and I'm going to man panel all at once. Look out. We had a great time talking about Glow. Not a big audience. It's hard to get much of a draw for those late night things. And 8:30 a.m. Saturday morning, I was moderating a panel called It Was 1980-something.
Right.
They like to put me on those early morning things. So
because you show up.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm up anyway. It was 1980-something. Troy was on this panel with me. I did a couple of panels with Troy this weekend. Andy Hicks was on this panel. A woman named Randy, who I met last year, and she's fantastic. She's a writer and a publisher. She's great. She was on the panel. And another author named Amy. So we had a great panel. The panel was about 80s nostalgia, the current state of 80s nostalgia, like Stranger Things and like Ready Player One, the Goldbergs. Cobra Kai, Glow is another one even.
Yeah.
You know, so much stuff like that is 80s themed these days. The surprising thing for the 8:30 a.m. panel, a big audience. A lot of people came.
Oh, people love their 80s.
I guess. I was surprised. So nice to see so many people looking to talk about the 80s first thing in the morning. That was good. I signed up for a couple of workshops Saturday morning. And the first one was right after my 80s panel. It was a figure drawing. Figure drawing cosplay edition.
That
so,
sounds
you know,
cool. Draw people in costumes.
Because, you know, I've been doing a lot of figure drawing over the past year. You know, I go to figure drawing
right.
like a couple times a month for the last year or so. I've been going to these life drawing sessions. Those are naked people. You know, you go to those life drawing things.
I was wondering if you were going to get into that. Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I thought.
So the cosplaying people.
Here's my chance to draw someone who's wearing something.
Yes.
For a change.
Woohoo!
I wonder what people look like when they have clothes on.
I imagine that was a burning question.
Flipping through all my sketchbooks and I have no idea. So yeah, this was figure drawing cosplay edition.
And then you were surprised when none of them were wearing costumes.
Hey.
They had you completely fooled.
Yeah, they were all cosplaying as Dr. Manhattan and Mystique. The Silver Surfer. Wait a minute. These are naked costumes. So I go to the cosplay figure drawing, and it was very nice. There were several models taking turns modeling, a couple of steampunk costumes and some other costumes like that. What surprised me was how quick the poses were. Like, they were not posing for long. They were doing, like, 30-second pose, one-minute pose, two-minute pose, and then, all right, I'm sketching as fast as I can. I think, like, the longest poses were at the very end. They did a couple of five-minute poses. Those were the long ones.
Oh, wow.
I'm accustomed to those being the short ones. And they're wearing these beautiful, elaborate costumes, but I'm like...
With a lot of detail.
I don't have time to draw this stuff. These are... I'm going to show Cornflake. This is awful. It's for an audio podcast, but Cornflake can see. These are my five-minute sketches anyway. This woman, her name's Sarah, was in this beautiful steampunk gown. And this is what I could do in 5 minutes. Not bad, though, right?
Yeah.
Come on, for 5 minutes?
The proportions are spot on.
This is me...
And you've got a ton of detail in there.
This is me rushing through a five-minute pose. But she was a great model. I did what I could. The clock was ticking.
That you have drawings to show for... Kevin, I would have cried. I would have just been like, I can't do this. I would have had a meltdown. I would have been on the floor.
Well, you know, it's no pressure. We were not being judged. It wasn't a contest.
Oh, well, okay. So you're not, like, drawing for your life, essentially.
You're not drawing for your life, no.
But I'm impressed, Kevin.
Well, I did what I could. It was fun. It was a fun little drawing workout, you know. And, yeah, the models were great. An artist named Lisa organizes this every year.
Do you think if I go some year and I want to be a subject, they would allow me to model my Yip Yip costume?
Yes. I would love to see a Yip Yip modeling for the cosplay figure drawing session. That would be the best. I think you should absolutely do that next year.
Got it. It's on the list.
A Yip Yip, I feel like I could
render
pretty well in 5 minutes. Yes. Now, I had another workshop I signed up for right after this one. And this was a workshop that I actually had attempted to sign up for a couple of times in the past, but it fills up instantly. They do this every year. There's a guy that does this every year. You go to the programming room at Aresia, and you can sign up for workshops. They have sign-up lists, but they cap. You know, like each, depending on what kind of workshop it is, can only hold so many people. This is a workshop where the list is capped at 5. They only take 5 people. And I've gone in there at the beginning of Aresia a couple of times, and the list is already full.
Wow.
So people just fill up this list immediately every year. This year, I was there so early that I was actually the third person to sign up.
There were still people that got in before you did.
A couple of people were there ahead of me, and I'm sure it was full, like, probably 5 minutes after I walked out of the room. What kind of workshop is this?
I can't guess.
The Theremin.
Wow.
This workshop is called Hands On or Hands Off Theremin Workshop. And I'm a fan of the Theremin. Do you like the Theremin?
Of course. One of our recent favorite bands, the Fantastic Plastics, they have Theremin in one of their songs.
Oh, yeah. I like a good theremin. Not everyone enjoys the theremin.
I can't fathom.
I can cite an example without even leaving the studio, because the mayor of Chickentown hates the theremin.
Oh.
So she was not at the theremin workshop.
You think it's just, like, too spooky for some people? So,
yeah, I think that sound just freaks people out. But the theremin, for anyone who doesn't recognize the name, it's this electronic instrument. It's like a box with two big antennas sticking off of it. And it makes those weird...
I have a good example of it.
Yes.
In the end of the song, Good Vibrations by Beach Boys, right?
That's yes.
That thing.
Although that's not actually a theremin.
That's just something pretending to be a theremin?
Yeah, that's one of the most famous examples people always cite, but that's not actually a theremin in that song. But yeah, that wavy, weird kind of sound, that's sort of what a theremin sounds like.
The Beach Boys have been lying to me all these years?
Lied to by the Beach Boys. All these years, yes.
Like, I can't even tell you about... I was so excited to talk about the theremin, and now I just have this sinking feeling in my chest.
You've been living a lie on the beach.
Oh, wow.
But they use it in, like, old science fiction movies. If there's a UFO flying around, they'll put on some theremin. So people use it just as a weird sound effect. And then there's also people that can play it like a real instrument. And the theremin, it's played by just... You're just waving your hands around. You don't touch the theremin while you play it.
Right.
And it's electronic, and it's just affected... by where your hands are next to it. So it's a very weird instrument. It was invented in the early 20th century by this Russian guy. And then there's a weird story about this guy. Like, he disappeared for decades, and there was a story that he was kidnapped by the KGB. There was a documentary about this guy and about the creation of the theremin back in the 90s, which was really good. And so I've always been a fan of the theremin, just because it's so weird. I'd never had a chance to play one before. I finally got my chance this year because, yes, I was signed up for the theremin workshop at Aresia. So the five of us were there, and there were also another five or six people in the room, the waitlist people. They were there as well. So this guy, a guy named Marnin, he gave us a theremin lesson. Your left hand, you work the volume. Your right hand, you work the frequency, or the note, how high or low the sound is coming out of it. The volume thing, it's so weird because it gets louder the farther away you move your left hand from the theremin. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
And then the closer your right hand goes to the other antenna, the higher the frequency. But he kind of coached us through how to change the pitch, change the notes. And I was just awful.
You were?
Oh, yeah.
It's, how can you be bad at playing the theremin?
Well, if you're trying to play notes and actually like go through a scale, you know, he was really showing us how to make this thing, you know, play like an instrument. Not easy. So we all got a turn. And even the waitlist people got time as well. So everybody in the room got a chance to play around with it and give it a try, which was nice. So, yeah, theremin, Cornflake. I'm now officially a professional theremin player, is what I'm saying. I'm here to meet all your theremin needs from now on.
Okay, because I have a long list.
Oh, yeah, I could tell. You didn't even have to say anything.
The Beach Boys have let me down, but not you. You're the real deal.
So that was fun. I'm never going to do that again at Aresia, just because it's so in demand.
Because you want other people
to have turns. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to take up a spot on that list again.
From now on, I'm going to be on that list every year.
That's right.
To heck with anybody else who wants to learn.
I'm here for my annual theremin lesson. So now I do encourage other people, check it out if you can. Get there early. Sign up early if you want a shot at the theremin. Felicity and I went to a panel right after that, which was called 50 Years of Sesame Street, ah ha ha, you know, like the count.
Yes.
This was a panel about Sesame Street, just the 50 years of Sesame Street is 50 years old this year.
That blows my mind.
How about that? Started in 1969.
That makes sense.
Our buddy Andy was on this panel as well as our buddy Kevin Cafferty, who was also on the Saturday morning cartoon panel with me last year. Kevin was there. Dan, Nomi, Meg, good lineup on this panel talking about Sesame Street. You know me, I'm super old school on Sesame Street. I only know old 70s Sesame Street. But they talked a lot about how the show has changed, and I know it's changed radically. You've probably seen some Sesame Street more recently than I have.
Not all that recently, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, more recently than 1974.
Yes. I was able to bear witness to Sesame Street pretty much all through somewhere in the late to mid-90s. That I have a number of younger siblings, so
yeah.
I watched it with them.
I only know the old stuff. I like the Yip Yips, and I like those weird little cartoons. I like the weird old early 70s Sesame Street cartoons. The Alligator King. We were just talking about that the other day.
Yes.
The guy that animated that died. He was in our memorial show. I love the Alligator King.
I love the Ladybugs 12
yes.
and their Ladybugs Picnic.
Ladybug Picnic. You like the Pointer Sisters counting to 12 at the pinball machine?
I like that.
That's the best.
And the Oinker Sisters, that were the pigs that were like the Pointer Sisters. Singing.
I don't remember that. We like goofy old Sesame Street cartoons.
Love it.
Fun panel. Felicity and I also caught a panel later on Saturday on a subject that we were just talking about last week, I think, and that was the 100th anniversary of the Great Molasses Flood. They did a panel about the molasses flood at Aresia, which was nice.
That is nice.
Because, again, this was the days after the actual anniversary of the Boston's Great Molasses Flood, which we spoke of very recently. Again, it was a huge disaster. It was a bizarre catastrophe. But we caught some of the molasses panel, which was good. Like, they had an engineer who was on the panel who really could speak to the mechanics of how it all went wrong.
Oh, wow.
Big crowd. Like, the room was almost full for the molasses flood. So I think of every panel I went to all weekend, the biggest crowd was at the molasses flood panel. I had another panel to moderate Saturday night. This was another late one, 10 o'clock Saturday night. And that was Zed's Dead Baby, Pulp Fiction at 25.
I know so little about Pulp Fiction.
You've never seen Pulp Fiction? I'm not sure that you should ever see Pulp Fiction.
That has been my understanding from the get-go. There is one thing I very much appreciate about Pulp Fiction.
What's that?
I loved the soundtrack that went
with that movie. Cool music.
So cool.
Absolutely.
any and all of that I can listen to.
Yeah,
any
and all
day.
That surf rock is in it, plus, you know, Son of a Preacher Man and Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon.
Oh, yeah, The Urge Overkill. Love it. And it makes me sad that a movie with the soundtrack that I love so much is a movie I probably just don't have the bandwidth to watch.
You Never Can Tell, that they do the twist competition to.
Yes.
Travolta and Uma dance to that one.
You want to dance like Uma Thurman.
So Pulp Fiction is 25 years old this year, just like Clerks. I moderated the panel about it. This was with Troy once again, that I did the 80s thing with earlier that day. Troy, David, Santiago, and Corinne were my other panelists. As soon as we started the panel and everybody on the panel kind of talked through their introduction to the movie, and that's when I learned that I was the only person on the panel who was old enough to have been an adult who could walk into a theater and see it in 1994. Everybody else had stories about, I was in high school, or I remember my brother got me a copy of it. It was all that kind of thing.
I was just barely old enough where I, too, could have walked into the theater and watched it at the time. And a number of my classmates did.
But not a cornflake movie.
No.
Very violent. But very good. So it was late night. It was a small audience, but a great audience. They were into it. That was fun. I tried wandering around just to see if I'd run into anybody. After that, I ran into Wildcard.
Yay! We love to see Wildcard.
Good friend of ours, friend of the Flopcast.
So how is Wildcard these days?
Wildcard's good. We ran into each other actually right outside the Dr. Horrible sing-along. I ducked into one of the big performance room and Dr. Horrible was going in there. They had people in Dr. Horrible costumes up on stage. And I just kind of walked in for a minute, walked out. There's Wildcard. Wildcard had just come from Jim's Big Ego.
I was so upset when I heard I was going to miss this show.
Yeah, you missed Jim's Big Ego. Well, I missed Jim's Big Ego because I couldn't go to their concert either because I was on the Pulp Fiction thing at the same time.
Did Wildcard have anything to say about the show?
Yeah, well, just said it was a great show. Showed me a bunch of CDs as well. You know, was stocking up on Jim's Big Ego
so good.
CDs. So I had a nice time catching up anyway, just kind of hanging out outside the Dr. Horrible room. So that was nice. Yeah, I missed Jim's Big Ego, and I missed Minus World, which was that band that I discovered last year at Aresia. Again, I had a conflict. I think Minus World played Friday night, but it was during the GLOW panel. That band has the woman with the keytar.
Yeah, they're so
front.
Awesome.
They were very cool. They covered Taylor Dane.
Oh.
That's when they won my heart, you know, last year.
Yes.
When they sang Tell It to My Heart by Taylor Dane, I thought, wow, I love this band, but I missed them this year. Anyway, I kept wandering around, and I also ran into Boston's best-known Batman costumer, Matches Malone.
Matches, yes.
You know Matches. Any convention you go to around here, there's Matches Malone. You see an amazing Batman costume, that's Matches Malone. I can't walk by Matches. He will yell out to me, hey, get over here. don't just walk by me, Kevin. Get over here. And Matches, he does the conventions, and he also goes to hospitals. He visits children in hospitals as Batman all the time. He constantly gets asked to make appearances for kids and stuff, and he always says yes, and he goes.
Wow.
Yeah, he's great. Nice to catch up with Matches as well as Wildcard. That was my Saturday night, late night activities. Now, of course, it snowed all night.
Yep.
The snow, then it turned
snowing and blowing.
And then sleet. So it was icy and nasty. Pretty early Sunday, we made our careful drive through the snow and the sleet back to Chickentown. I'm not done with Aresia yet, though. But I did get home on Sunday, caught the football game that night. End of the game, I'm Turksting with Brittany. And I said, hey, Brittany, I have to go back to Aresia tomorrow morning.
No, this is funny, especially to us, because Mondays at Aresia are almost mythical. Really.
I've never been to Aresia on Monday. Aresia is a four-day convention.
Right.
But we'd never been on Monday before. It's Martin Luther King weekend, so the convention keeps going on Monday, and we'd never been there on Monday before. This year, they assigned me to a panel on Monday, so I finally had an excuse to go back to Aresia on a Monday.
What was it like?
Oh, Brittany thought I was crazy. She's like, what? She could not believe Aresia was still happening on Monday. And I said, yeah, I'm doing a panel. And I thought, there might be like three people at this panel, but I'm going to go. I'm going to do this panel. So I go back in Monday morning, and I can confirm there are a lot of people still at Aresia on Monday. There were people with Aresia badges wandering around the hotel. I went to an earlier panel. I went to a panel about Batman It was called Dark Knight Returns to a Theater Near You. And this was a panel just all about Batman at the movies, essentially. They were just talking about just the whole history of Batman in movies. So that was a good panel. My panel was after that. And this panel was called The Best Single Issue I Read. And the concept was single issues of comic books. What are your favorites? Simple enough. And it was good. The moderator named Siobhan, she was great. Daniel, Danny, and Karen were the rest of the panelists. Karen, you know, also...
Foxes in the Hen House.
Yeah, this is Karen from the late, great Foxes in the Hen House podcast. They've been on a long hiatus for the past year or so. But yeah, Karen was also on that Saturday morning cartoon panel with me last year. Another super fun panel. We each had like a couple of examples of favorite single-issue comics of ours. Karen, I knew, was going to talk about the Ninja Turtles, because she's a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan. I got my examples here. I brought a Swamp Thing comic with me. This was Swamp Thing number 21 from the early 80s. This was a pretty well-known issue of Swamp Thing. This is the issue where Alan Moore started his classic storyline on the Swamp Things. This is a story called The Anatomy Lesson, which is just considered a classic. So kind of an easy pick, but I brought that one. My weirder pick was this one. This is Action Comics number 497 from 1979, I think. This was just a Superman comic that I got when I was a kid, and it's just a nice little story. There's no villains in it or anything. It's about these kids that have a Superman fan club. They're just these three little kids that are into Superman, and they realize that they somehow have the power to whatever they wish Superman would do. Superman would be somehow compelled to do that. So they suddenly were in control of Superman.
Like Superman is a genie in a bottle.
Yeah, and they didn't even know how it happened.
Uh-huh.
They just suddenly had this mysterious power to control Superman. So that was my kind of offbeat pick that I brought to this panel. Anyway, remember my prediction from Turk's thing with Brittany the night before that there would be three people in the audience? There were three people in the audience.
You did it.
If only I'd laid down some money in Vegas. We had an audience of three. And I knew two of them.
Wow.
Actually, an old friend of mine, a guy named Drew from Boston Skeptics, he was in the audience.
Cool.
And Liz, who, like Karen, was on the Foxes in the Hen House podcast.
You had guessed three. Yeah. I would have won no money. I'm not going to tell you what number I would have guessed, but I will say that it rhymes with De Niro. And this is not a vote against you in any way, shape, or form. This is a Monday at Aresia after a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And it's freezing cold.
I've been on panels where as it's almost time to start, when you're watching people coming in, and is the panel going to outnumber the audience?
Right.
And it's touch and go. And this is the first time I think I've actually been on a panel where, yes, the panel outnumbered the audience. It was fantastic.
It's still a great conversation, I'm sure.
It was good. So yeah, the audience was Drew and Liz and another girl who I did not know, who actually did flash the panel at one point. She actually lifted up her shirt.
Like the wind didn't catch her like
No,
with
this
me.
Was intentional. It was like the Motley Crue Home Sweet Home video.
Oh my goodness. Well, there you go. Now, there is your reason to go to a panel on a Monday morning. Yeah.
Now, full disclosure, she was wearing a bigger shirt under the first shirt.
Oh, okay.
She wanted to show us that she actually had a shirt with a Superman logo on it, because we kept bringing up all these Superman comics, and she was way into Superman, and she was like, look at this.
I am glad for the context, because that is not what I guessed was happening.
I could not help misleading you there for a second.
You're so good at it. Either that, or I'm so good at being misled, or maybe both of those.
This wasn't like you arriving at Aresia last year in the wind.
With my shirt becoming a wind sail.
My final thing at Aresia was I did catch but one musical performance, even though I missed Minus World, I missed Jim's Big Ego, but there was a woman just like in the hallway at Aresia on Monday playing the harp. Her name's Sarah Henya. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, H-E-N-Y-A. And she was just set up with this giant harp and playing beautifully. And I just stood there catching some harp music.
Wow.
Because I like the harp. You know, it's no theremin, but it's still a nice instrument.
True.
So I recommend check out the harp music of Sarah Henya. She had CDs and stuff there, I think. So she was good. That was my Aresia experience this year, Cornflake.
You really made a fun-filled weekend out of Aresia.
And we were supposed to have the mayor of Chickentown here with us this week, but the mayor ended up having to cancel. She's not available to join us this week. The mayor was at Aresia with me all weekend, and she was posting stuff to Twitter for the Flopcast all weekend as well. So you were getting Twitter updates if you follow us on Twitter. That was a Rizzio corn flick. Man, that was long enough. Let's wrap up.
Okay. Between shows, do find us on the internet, won't you, at flopcast.net or at facebook.com/flopcast. How about on Twitter? Yeah, there too. At Flopcast is our handle. And on Instagram, we are the_Flopcast.
Oh, yes. All right, Cornflake, that was our first convention of the year. It's done. Time to move on. I think the plan next week is we're going to talk about some conventions that are coming up.
Good plan.
That's the plan. See you there. See you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Hey, this is Mike. A few months back, I was given the assignment of creating a new promo for the Earth Station 1 podcast. I figured I had a ton of time, but I kind of got distracted. Go figure. And we realized we had somehow missed our deadline. Hey, so here I am late at night trying to figure out something creative to get you to listen to our show. I guess I could just use my announcer voice. Listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. For almost 9 years, we've been bringing your inner geek out to play. We're a founding member of the ESO Network, and you can find us up on most media players like iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. I think that might work.
Cornflake, it's the secret after show.
It is.
Hello.
There's a couple of things we could talk about.
Okay, do it.
Well, confession to make.
What do you have?
I've been sipping iced coffee throughout the winter, thanks to winning my fish heads bet.
You got that right.
I have a confession. I snuck some hot coffee before I got here today.
Well, I don't think you were legally obligated to have only iced coffee throughout the winter, were you?
Oh.
Yeah. You've been afraid to drink hot coffee all this time.
Oh, well, okay.
Do you feel like I should be disappointed in you right now? Because I can be if you want me to.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESOnetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.